today. Welcome back to another episode of Corporate Connections at Pitt Business. Today we're on site at 1486 Labs with...
Hi, I'm Andy Hanna. I'm the Executive Director of 1486 Labs, and I'm also the President of the Data Science Division of a large ed tech company in Boston called Liaison. And finally, I'm also an adjunct professor here at the University of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, definitely a man of many, many jobs.
Yeah, maybe too many.
So just to start out, would you mind giving us a little bit of background about maybe your college life and how you started out there?
Sure. So I grew up in Pittsburgh, and back in the late, mid-1980s, I went to Penn State University, and I got my undergraduate degree there. And I started in accounting with Deloitte, and I went back to business school early 90s, and I went back to Deloitte in a sort of new product development, middle market consulting role. And then I decided I wanted to be part of the entrepreneurial seat and join my first entrepreneurial company back in the mid-1990s, and I've been with 5 startups ever since, been a co-founder of 3 of them. And also love to teach. I've been teaching since the early 2000s, first at Carnegie Mellon, now here at
Yeah, no, that's super cool to hear. How did you decide that you were more interested in the entrepreneurship side of things rather than accounting?
Yeah, I think that's a discovery process. You really don't know what you want to do until something happens in your career, and it makes you realize that you found what you want to do. And that, for me, was the first startup. I joined a company called Internet Securities back in the mid-1990s, and just fell in love with entrepreneurial companies. And I was very fortunate that our first business was successful, and we were able to grow it to 250 employees around the world and 17 different offices, and had a ton of fun. And the company was purchased by a large company in 1999. So you had this experience where it's like, oh, this is what I want to do. And I've been in that world ever since.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. Can you talk about the process for starting 1486 Labs and your inspiration to do that?
Sure. So we were fortunate enough, my co-founders and I started a machine learning company about 9 years ago. And we had a lot of fun growing that. It was focused on higher education and how we help schools find students who are the best fit for their universities and make sure more of them graduate. We were using machine learning and AI to do that. A company called Liaison came by a couple of years ago and thought that we would fit really well into their company, and we did that. About two years ago now, I had decided that, hey, I wanted to create an idea for students to experience startups and to actually build something as opposed to sort of being theoretic about it or reading case studies. And so we had this idea of what I call an upside down incubator. So as opposed to students coming with the idea, we would have the idea and then students would come and help build it. And so it's really about teaching. It's really about giving that educational experience to the students while creating something that's real and valuable in the companies and products that we build.
Yeah, that's so cool, honestly. Like, for us, like, we started something as well. So, like, we think that getting some hands-on experience is honestly just, like, the best way to learn and grow. And it's really cool that you guys are able to actually make a difference too. Like, the students are not only able to bring you their ideas, but like, they're working for you, like, they're doing real things.
Yeah, I mean, we have 22 students now, I think, and they all have real jobs. They all, some are managers now and managing other students. And so it is, you get experience not only building a company, but whatever sort of the functional experience you're looking for, like marketing or product or something like that, and then managerial experience as well.
Yeah, for sure. Have you come across any struggles of working with students rather than other business professionals?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think one of the obvious ones is they're new to the experience. So they don't have a lot of depth in solving problems that they've seen before. They're solving problems from the first time. And the really positive thing is about that is they bring their own ideas about how to solve them. The negative is it's like, okay, well, that may work, it may not, but you probably should go in this direction. So I think it requires a little bit more sort of oversight without restricting people's ability to be creative. And that's one of the things that we really want people to have the opportunity. You might have heard this, but to fail fast. So it's like, try it. If it works, great. We've solved the problem. If not, it's okay. Let's go back at it again.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that that's honestly one of the best ways to learn. I like the fail fast quote. I think failure is like a really quick way to get back on your feet because you know it didn't work, and then you just have to try something else and hope that the next thing works out. If you fail fast again, you try again, and just until then, that for next time, you know that that's just not the right way to go about
it. Yeah, and you want to create that environment, you know, so where people feel safe. And mm-hmm. you hear this a lot too. There's a lot of companies I know that talk about fail fast, but don't like to fail.
Yeah.
And that creates sort of this weird pressure. It's like, is it really okay to fail? So you have to create the environment where it's like, okay, fail fast, and then let's diagnose the problem, and then what's the solution for the problem? You know, we do that every day. It's like, okay, what didn't work? What did work? How do we fix it? And let's go. It's like, let's just go.
Yeah, it was super important for college students to hear that as well, because when you go into an internship, you want to do your best, perform your best, and it's nicer to have that sort of teaching environment where you're just learning as you go rather than having the pressures of already being perfect.
Right, and so what I say is also sort of as a caution is that the environment that we create here isn't necessarily the same one that you're going to experience once you graduate. Yeah. And I like to say that I spoil people for the rest of their careers, right? Because you get to be in this environment that's safe, and you get to practice, and you get to try things, and you make success, and it's a real business. But it's like that environment is hard to replicate. So I think we're, you know, I think that that experience actually sets a standard for what students should be looking for when they go into the real world. What's the environment I'm going into? Is it going to be like what I've experienced here?
Yeah, it's good to start with high standards and that they know their worth and they know what they can bring to a company and then how a company should be treating that.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you have an experience like this as an internship or in a job, or were you like kids and you to sort of be taught how to this idea?
My first internship was with IBM after my sophomore year of college, and I felt like I knew at that moment that I didn't want to be part of a big structured company like IBM. Nothing wrong with IBM, terrific company, but just for me personally, that wasn't what I was wanted to experience. Did have a really great internship with Deloitte, which showed me sort of a little bit more about, you know, how you can have relationships with people inside the organization, with your clients. So that was great, but nothing like this. I think where this idea really came out of is I used to teach entrepreneurship at CNU. I used to teach in a very traditional way, books and case studies, speakers, and a little bit of simulation, but it's like, I want to get back into teaching entrepreneurship, want to do something different. And it's like, okay, hands-on. You guys said it, hands-on. And that's really where this idea is like, okay, I want it to be experience-based completely and not textbook at all.
How do you balance everything?
But I'm wondering, because the three jobs, and like, I need the work life balance.
Yeah,
so
please tell us your secrets.
So my wife right now is watching and laughing at this. It's like, because I told her, I said I'm retiring after Liaison purchased OTHOT, and she just laughed like you'll never retire. So I tell her every now and then I'm retired, but I have three jobs. How do I balance it all? And I think it's about it's about prioritization. What's important to you? It's about doing the right thing. It's about, you know, staying in present time, creating opportunities to be present in whatever you're doing. So like this, as an example, is really important to me because I want to help you guys as you build your business. But I also hope that some students will take some ideas from this. But I think it's those three combination of things. It's prioritize, do the right thing, and stay in present time, and be okay. It's okay. It's like, if I don't get to everything, it's okay. And so it's a frame of mind that probably takes, 30 years to cultivate. So don't think that you can do that now. You're still trying to figure those out, but it's the balance of those things that allows me to sort of do what I do.
That's really nice to hear that it's going to take time, and we don't have to have it all figured out right now.
I think that's part of, everybody's always in a hurry, and I was at, you know, this stage in my career. It's like you're in a hurry, you want to know the answer, you want to know the path, you want to, and you, it's everybody like, oh, it'll, don't worry, you know, it'll take time and everything like that. And unfortunately, it's true. It's, you know, it, I think what's important is that you find organizations that have common values of what you believe in. Don't, you know, don't ever go against your values. And it's about finding the organizations and industries that you like, and that is going to give you experience. It isn't about the job, you know, it isn't about the pay, sorry, you know, it's not, that'll come. It's about the experience and working with people that you really like and that are going to teach you.
Did you think that you had any experiences? I know that you were referring to some of your internships, but was there like a defining career turn point for you?
You know, I always knew that I wanted to run companies, but I didn't know how I was going to get there. I didn't know what type of company. And you look back and you see patterns. Like when I was in college, I helped found a student credit union. And so it's like, oh, that's interesting. When I graduated from college, I started a not-for-profit organization called Leadership Development Initiative. And so it's like, oh, wait, there's a pattern here. I like new things. I like to start things. I was in a new product development my last stint at Deloitte. So, I'd like to start this. So it's like you recognize these patterns. And I think, you know, so it was like starting to recognize those patterns, but it was that first job, you know, that with the, in an entrepreneurial situation where you said, oh, this is it. This is the thing I want to do. So that was sort of the defining moment.
Yeah, it's nice to have like that light bulb moment. I know it might not always just be one, but being able to figure out those patterns.
It's easy when you're in my stage of the career and look back and say, oh, it was that. You never know really that it's that moment until a decade later and say, hey, you know what? It was that boss that I had, or it was that company that I was at, or it was in that industry. It's like, that's when I... So even when the light bulb goes off, you don't realize it because it's light outside and the light bulb goes off. It's like, did it really matter? And then a decade later, you say, that light bulb mattered.
Well, what you say is your biggest piece of advice for someone starting their own business?
Well, starting their own business. So I think it's getting people involved that have started businesses before or that know your industry, whatever that industry is, better than anything else. It's that there's no substitute for getting others involved that have the wisdom and the experience. And I think I see that too often that, you know, younger adults who start companies are, they want to do everything themselves. And they're like, I can do this, I can do this. It's like, it's okay to bring people in that actually have done it before and bring them in a meaningful way, which means actually, okay, I need to build this company. Help me figure out what are the five critical steps? You know, what should I look out for? It's like having the... ability to, in the humility to bring somebody in to say, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, can you help me? Can you help me figure this out? Then you have to have the right person to help you with that.
Is there anything about entrepreneurship that you think most people don't really know that you've come to learn over your years of experience?
Okay, I've been asked a lot of questions in my life, and that's one I don't think I've been asked before.
Sorry.
No, it's a great question. I think everybody, I think all professions are sort of positioned by the media in a certain way. It's like television, you know, we see how doctors are on television or lawyers or whatever. Like, I think the entrepreneurs actually are, what do you think about television and entrepreneurship? What do you think about?
Shark Tank,
right? Yeah, that's what you think. You think about Mark Cuban on Shark Tank, and you think about, oh, that's what entrepreneurship is really like. Or you see Silicon Valley, you know, that's HBO. You see this what that environment's really like. I mean, there's elements of that, but it's really about sort of, you know, solving problems, creating opportunities for the world, either people or businesses. And it is... It takes a lot of hard work to do it. Not that that would be any surprise to anybody, but it's not as sort of glitzy as what you might see on those television shows. It's about putting in the hard work to solve problems for people or companies. That's what true entrepreneurship is all about.
Yeah, that's really cool to be able to hear that from you, who we definitely think is a true entrepreneur.
Oh, thank you.
Have you ever debated about going on one of those shows like Shark Tank or anything to pitch like 1486 or any of your other ideas?
I mean, I won't even watch those shows. I mean, my wife, she loves like not Silicon Valley was one of those shows that she really liked. It's like, it's so far from real. I think it's like how doctors feel about watching some shows that you might see on Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
I don't know how real Grey's Anatomy is, but and there's a lot of, I mean, there's some realism about Silicon Valley. It is supposed to be a little bit tongue in cheek, you know, but it's like, just like, that's my life that they're trying to depict, but not really my life, you know? So I've never really felt like going on the Shark Tank would make sense to me. Yeah.
And how do you recommend that on the companies stay leave indifferent from others?
Yeah, so having a unique differentiator is something that's absolutely critical. And I think you really need to study the competition. You need to study others who are trying to do what you're doing and why are you different and how is that protectable, and being able to communicate that. So because anybody who wants to join your company or invest in your company or be, you know, a customer of your company, they all want to know what is different. Why are you solving this problem differently? How are you solving it differently than everybody else? That's a key differentiator to being successful, I think, in entrepreneurship.
And how do you recommend getting that out there to that audience? Is it through marketing? Is it just through experiences, like working with the company? Mm-hmm. I feel like that's like one of the hardest things to get out there. It's like you might have that unique thing, but you don't know how to spread the word.
Yeah, and so that's all about targeting the audience, right? So who are you trying to communicate to first, right? So, and I'm a big believer in sort of activity-based marketing and really understanding, the individual that you're trying to market to. Technology is so good right now that we can identify individuals who would be interested in our product or service, and we can nurture them through campaigns, whether it's social media or whether it's a email blast or whether it's some other type of marketing. But what you really want to do is get as granular as you possibly can about those individuals who could buy your product or service, and then nurture them over a period of time and use the right technologies to understand what moves them, what motivates them. And it can, you know, different audiences are impacted by different things, whether it's, you know, a younger audience that might be interested in TikTok, right? Or it's a more, you know, corporate-oriented buyer who would be motivated by an email newsletter, as an example, and driving them to a LinkedIn site or to a website or something like that. So it's really understanding the community that you're trying to market to and how they best receive information.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. I know this kind of ties a little bit into 1486, but using data seems to be like the way of the future. At least that's kind of what we've been learning. I know that you have a lot of connections with students, like, and especially at the University of Pittsburgh, they're adding the business analytics major, kind of reforming a little bit in there. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend to current students now who maybe would be interested in marketing or entrepreneurship to learn a little bit more about that data analytics side of things?
So if you're not doing anything in data analytics, you know, that I think that you're missing a huge opportunity. Somehow you have to get, like, everything eventually is going to tie back to data and analytics, because, you know, we're becoming a very math-driven society. We're becoming sort of a way where our ability to market, as we talked about just in the last question, but our ability to understand behaviors is all driven back to this data and analytics. If you want to serve a person or you want to serve a company, you want to understand their problems and how they behave to solutions, and that can be done through data and analytics. But what we teach you in our analytics program at the University of Pittsburgh is how to use that data and model it and use it for decision making, and how we combine the human with the artificial intelligence. right? That's a really critical piece to it, is that we're not, you know, we don't do these things to replace the human. We do these things so that we create better opportunities for humans to make more interesting and better and creative decision making. And so the major is actually designed to be a companion major, meaning couple it with a dual major. So couple it with something else like market or supply chain for finance. And so you get the combination of your learning the discipline of the vertical of, you know, a traditional degree, but you're adding to it this degree related to analytics. So it becomes a very powerful combination. And that's the reason why we developed the major in the way that we did.
Yeah, I definitely think that that was a really good move. I'm getting the certificate right now, but I kind of do wish that I would have went the route of the major. I do still enjoy like all the education I've gotten from it, but just by talking to a lot of the other younger students, for you guys, the major is becoming a lot more attainable. I don't know if you have anything to speak on with the analytics side. I know you've just now started.
Yeah, I know a lot of my friends are like, we're doing data analytics. We're really excited about the program as well. So I'm excited to see if this can help.
Well, that's great. I mean, we started this 9 years ago, I think close to 10 years ago, with one class. And we grew it from there. We started to build like extracurricular activities like LEAP as a club, if you've heard of that. We have a competition with Dick's Sporting Goods that's a national case competition around Dick Analytics. And then we continue to add different classes, and then we changed the core curriculum just last year or 2 years ago to be very math oriented to prepare students to be able to use data and analytics. So it's been a 10-year journey to get to where we are with the major, but it's been so worth it and been very fulfilling.
Have you seen a lot of students who have been able to graduate at least with the certificate and like an increase in jobs with them?
100%. So the ability for our students to communicate with employers that they say that they can speak the language of data and analytics, that they know how it applies. Marketing is a great example of that. And it's probably on, you know, sort of the edge in terms of using analytics, because if you're marketing to people, it is, how do we understand sort of that behavior that we talked about? How do we understand how best to market, whether or not somebody's reacting up to a particular campaign or to a particular promotion or whatever it may be? You know, that the ability for our students to go in and have conversations with for those types of roles, it sort of reduces the friction to getting those jobs. So we're definitely seeing that. We're seeing a lot of students going into consulting-oriented jobs because that mindset of using analytics to make decisions or to analyze a problem is very different than you would get without that analytics certificate or major.
And as a freshman, I'm hearing a lot about networking and going to networking events, connecting with people like Dick. How do you best network?
So this is one of my favorite questions. So I think, you know, the problem with networking, or the way that we talk about network generally, is that you better go out and meet people. It's like meet people. It's like the objective. And I think, so I would change that a little bit. I would say that you should be networking with a purpose, meaning that you want something out of the relationship, that the person that you're building a relationship would like to get something from you, and you would like to get something from that relationship. So what you might say, well, what do I have to offer? But to understand the mindset of your generation, you know, for somebody that's of my generation, that's incredibly valuable, right? So that I can understand how people are thinking, how the world is changing. You actually have that to offer me, right? Which is one of the reasons why I love to be on campus, right? Because I'm not only am I learning the current slang, right? So that I can talk to my daughters, but then I can, then I can see Cole. But in reality, you know, it is learning a different perspective and how you're thinking about how you're working, right? How do you view work? You know, these things, you offer that to me, right? What can I offer to you? I can offer to you sort of internships. I can offer to you connections to people where you might be able to. And that's what you should be. What do you want to get out of a relationship with me? Oh, I'm interested in an internship. I want to know more about a particular industry. I want to understand how data and analytics is impacting a particular age. So there's a purpose for that. If you just meet somebody and say, oh, it's nice to meet you, that's great. have a cocktail. About maybe not yet, but you know, so
almost.
Yeah, almost. But you know, so you can. It's okay to do that. But I think if we can more think about networking as an active, sort of an active activity, an active sort of occurrence, right? So you're trying to get something out of it, and not in a negative way. That you're exchanging. You're exchanging value in some way.
Sure.
Do you think that there's any really good way that students can present their own value without looking like they're just trying to get an internship out of it? Like, I believe a lot of students do have something to offer, but
yeah.
I don't know if we have the best way of going about showing what we have to offer all the time.
Yeah, I think so. I think the best thing that you can show to people that you're networking with is intellectual curiosity. And it's like, so you want to learn. Generally, I like to say, if I'm talking more than 20% of the time in a discussion, then I've not done my job, right? It's me. I love to ask questions and learn, right? And I think that that shows intellectual curiosity. And that's what a lot of people like, oh, wow, that was a really insightful question. Like, insightful question I hadn't heard before. I mean, that's exciting to me. So it's like that intellectual curiosity is really important. So I think when you think about relationships and in networking, what are the questions? What do you really want to get out of it? They'll give you it, that's the value that you're learning, and then they'll reciprocate and say, okay, you tell me your views. You know, it's that exchange, and I don't think we think about networking like an exchange enough, or we think about it as a relationship. I know you now. Okay, so what? Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I know a lot of people.
No, exactly.
But you have this exchange where you're getting something, I'm getting something in a meaningful way, not cursory, right? And I think that's what makes it different.
Yeah, that's really, really good advice. So that's kind of like one of the biggest pieces of our organization is not only our connections via podcast, but also a lot of networking. So we will always take all the advice that we can get. And it's good to think of it as an exchange rather than just a relationship.
I told you before we went on air, I mean, this is great. What a great idea.
Thank you.
What a great opportunity to get experience. I mean, you both, I mean, no cards, you know, the questions are very insightful. It's just what you're building skills that are just going to be pay you dividends in the future.
Yeah, we really, really appreciate that. We try to keep things as authentic as possible without the no cards and
too many set questions.
No, I think that's what makes it real. I mean, that's what makes it fun, you know, is that it doesn't feel scripted at all. I mean, we have no prep.
Yeah.
Which is great. And that's what you want. You want that natural, that authentic voice.
So this is kind of going backwards into where we were before, but considering you're a professor, but you also have a lot of experience with AI and machine learning, how do you feel about students using AI to their benefit, not necessarily to cheat, but to make their work better?
Yeah, so I'm very much a believer in you use the tools that you're given to do the best job that you can. And so there's a difference between sort of using a tool to improve your work product as opposed to, you know, presenting it as original thought. And I think that's the difference. So if you're going to use ChatGPT or BART or whatever you're going to use to create content that you're going to put off as your own, I think that that's a mistake. But if you have original thought that you're trying to augment and that you want to sort of figure out how do you put depth to that original thought, I think you should absolutely use it. And I think we're still trying to figure, it's a very new tool, right? We're trying to figure out, it's like, you know, back in my day, you weren't allowed to take a calculator into math class. It's like, okay, well, that's a tool that you should be able to use. Yes, you know, when you're writing the basics, that's true. But can you imagine doing some calculus problems without? But
no, I cannot.
Like before me, it was a slide rule. I'm not that old. But you know, but it's like you need to use the tools to make your life better. So I think that it's okay. But I think that we haven't figured out students. I can tell students are using ChatGPT or BART, whatever, without giving credit. And I think that that is the piece that we have to figure out, is like, it's okay to use it. You need to tell me when you're using it and how you used it. So I've been recently reading papers where I know that there's been some ChatGPT used, but the credit hasn't been given to that source. And it's just, I think we need to think about it as a source. And so we'll get better at it.
Yeah, for sure. I know it's kind of really was brought into light a lot more last semester than it was my first semester of being here. But I like the idea of using it as a source, because you are allowed to use the internet. You are allowed to use books and articles and like different writings. So it is a resource.
Sure.
It's hard to not get credit because then you are playing off work.
And I think the way that I'm moving is to say, tell me what your original thought is. Mm-hmm. Okay. And now you develop that original thought into sort of a work product, right? Something that you're delivering. And so what tools did you use? You know, oh, I use the internet. I use this book. You know, I use ChatGPT. Here's the prompt I do this. Right? So if the prompt is, you know, whatever, create original thought, that's wrong. Right? So that's like, here's my thought, and here's how I use the tools to give me the best work product possible. Because I can tell you, here, we use ChatGPT constantly to understand sort of wide array of information and how do you put into concise, set of paragraphs that people can understand. Every company is doing that. How do I write a better email? How do I better communicate this problem or the solution to the problem? It's like, how do I better do it? You know, and I think that that's what we have to figure out, how, you know, to get comfortable that it's okay to use these technologies in the right way.
And I'm just using responsibilities, the biggest part.
Responsible AI, that's something that I really think is a great concept, and I preach a lot about that. We are not in a battle. We have to stop thinking about it as us versus the AI, in that it is an AI is an extension of ourselves. It's like putting an extra brain up there. I mean, it's about a processor. It's about the incredibly powerful processor, but we have to use it responsibly. You know, and we're still figuring that out too. This is all very new. And this type of technology, this type of AI is very new to the general public. And so we have to figure out how to use it responsibly.
So like, as somebody who has worked in it longer than it was available to the general public, where did you see the biggest shift in first maybe noticing the students were using AI?
No, it's just, I mean, ChatGPT, the amount of time, there's two pieces about ChatGPT. One is that it's an incredibly powerful technology. The second piece is that it's accessible. And that's the accessible piece has never really been available to the general public. It's like, I can tell you what machine learning is, but it's not many people can actually go build a classification model to determine the likelihood that somebody's going to buy a product.
Yeah.
Right? I just say that and you go, oh, geez, wait. You think I have Python and data mining. It's like, you have to, like,
yeah.
But if I say, hey, go and use ChatGPT and learn more about subject A or B or C, it's like anybody can do that, right? Anybody can do that. So that accessibility and the power of that tool together, it makes us very different. So it's a year ago, whenever it became, accessible to everybody. It's like, what is this? And how quickly it is adopted by people. It is something that we haven't seen before. So that's what makes it really different and special.
Yeah, definitely that adoption rate is so fast, because I think most people didn't believe in DAO anything about AI, and suddenly they're using ChatGPT like their first resource rather than...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
what you
really
don't want to hear.
Shift,
yeah.
But.
It's like, but that's the learning how to use it. And we'll probably have a class, is my guess, next year, the year following, to say, here's how you use ChatGPT responsibly, right? That's the, if you want to use it, it's not about original thought. It's about how to better communicate.
And I think that can be really beneficial for students, because you were mentioning that all the companies are doing, you guys do it, a lot of places in the workforce are doing it. So if you learn in college how to responsibly use it, how to be able to cite it, then whenever you're using it in the workplace, you'll know what you're doing, and you'll be able to also hopefully bring that AI responsibility with you.
Right. And I think part of the problem is that people will take the results of using those types of technologies as fact. And as we know, it can hallucinate. And, until it gets trained in a way that it really understands the questions that we're asking for and finds the right source material to bring back the answer, we have to be editors. We have to be source checking, right? We have to, just like we would with any paper, we need to make sure that the, what's coming from that source is that one source is not good enough, right? We need to make sure that we fact check and that we see that there's multiple sources. Oh, yes, ChatGPT did a wonderful job on that, but that really doesn't exist, right? Or, oh yeah, that does exist because I found another source for it.
Before we sign off, what would you say your one biggest piece of advice would be for any college student?
Oh, for college students, I mean, it's so terrible advice. It's going to be terrible advice. Just don't be in a hurry. I mean, it's horrible advice because you won't be in a hurry. You can't help it. But, you know, looking back, you know, 30 years, I don't know what I'll talk about, like, you know, 35 years from graduating, it's like, why was I in such a hurry? It's like, but maybe being in a hurry creates opportunities. It's like finding the right balance.
Yeah.
It's not being worried. It's, you know, letting the world unfold as it should. You know, that's one of our family sayings, let the universe unfold as it should. You know, don't be so worried about things that are happening around you because in the end, it's going to be okay. And I think just that calmness, that like not worrying, somehow finding the tool that allows you to reduce your worry is probably the biggest advice. It's you're never going to slow down because you want to be successful, you want to do things. But there is a worry that comes along with that stress, that pressure. And everybody has to find something, some mechanism that's going to reduce that stress or that pressure. And so I would say, find that. You know, what is it for you? Is it meditation? Is it yoga? Is it reading? Is it, you know, sitting in a park? Is it art? Is it music? Is it something that takes that stress away? And it's not using it just to take the stress away for one period of time. It's like, what's going to keep me calm throughout even when I'm happy, I'll do it. When I'm sad, I'll do it. When I'm stressed, I'll do it. It's just that keeps that level playing field for you throughout your careers, throughout college and your professional careers.
Yeah,
that's super, super insightful. And I'm sure a lot of students could definitely use that advice and probably need that advice, especially at these times now, finals coming up. Yep. And just life is getting crazy. We really, really appreciate you coming on.
It's my pleasure.
Today.
Yeah, it's been a great fun. Anytime, I'd be happy to, you know, return if you ever need.
Yeah, no, of course. We'll definitely.
Thank you.
Thank you.